Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Mosaics. Right now, I have the pleasure, the honor, and the delight to be sitting next to a very good friend, very dear friend indeed, Mr. Derek Collini, who I have known for many years and have been in many different trenches, doing many different things, many different programs through decades, even though he still looks quite young. We'll have to ask him a secret at the end of the program. Derek Collini has a distinguished career as a practitioner and a teacher and a Buddhist. He worked for many years for external affairs in the old Vajradhatu days. He's also been a Buddhist teacher. And he is the founder and teacher, one of them, of the Westchester Buddhist Center in New York and outside New York in Westchester County. He's also the inspiration and instructor for the Advanced Buddhist Studies Program, or the Rime Shedra, in New York City. He's also married to Jane Collini, and a very dear friend of many people. Welcome, Derek.
Thank you, Julia.
You served in various capacities in the mandala. What did you do?
Well, initially when I became a member at Dharmadhatu, they asked... They said generally all members are expected to do some sort of service, and they gave me the options, and I chose to be a Dorje Khasang. And in May of 78, the region and then Trungpa Rinpoche came to Boston and did a seminar, the region for 3 weeks and Rinpoche for a week, and I got at that time the opportunity to do personal guard shifts with Rinpoche. And in 1979, I met and became friends with Carl Springer, the director of external affairs, and he asked me to help him organize the hosting and the security and reception for His Holiness the Dalai Lama's first visit to New York City in 1979, September of that year, which I did.
My goodness, that must have been very complicated.
It was, and that was totally mind-blowing for me, being 20 years old and thrown into this world, all sorts of interaction with Rinpoche and the region and all these other important people in the Vajradhatu Mandala, and not to mention His Holiness the Dalai Lama and that whole world.
Did the Dalai Lama also go to Boston in that trip?
He did. He went up to Cambridge, stayed at Harvard, was hosted in a house at Harvard.
Yeah, and I believe he gave a lecture at a church near Copley Square at some point.
That's right.
That's right. And it must have been very interesting to deal with the Vajra politics of the various lineages coming together. Because it was Trungpa Rinpoche who invited him, right? Or who invited him?
He had been invited by his office of Tibet.
Okay.
But they had no capability of providing any security for him. And we had somewhat of a relationship with the Office of Tibet. And
Office of Tibet being?
The Dalai Lama's, the representative office of the...
Government in exile.
Government in exile of Tibet. And since they're not recognized as a country, they didn't have a mission to the United Nations, so this was really their office in lieu of a mission.
And how long did that visit last, more or less?
Probably a month or so. He went also up to Amherst, Massachusetts, and gave talks up there as well.
Probably under Robert Thurman's auspices.
That's correct. And I believe he went also to the Midwest, to Madison, Wisconsin, where Geshe Sopo was. And so the day of his arrival, there's a famous photograph that's in the book by Fabrice Midal called Recalling Chogyam Trungpa. Of Rinpoche and the region and the entire board of directors waiting for the Dalai Lama's arrival at 21st Street in New York City. And myself and Peter Walter in that.
Looking profoundly mafiosi.
That's correct.
With the region front and center a bit, looking like, you know, let's make sure we don't get whacked.
Definitely looks like a mafioso picture.
I believe you were involved in the Lumbini Project also.
Yes, that's correct. The Lumbini Project was an international effort to restore the birthplace of the Buddha, the historical site of that, and to establish it as a major cultural and pilgrimage site for the world, and have temples and monasteries and representative establishments from all the different traditions of Buddhism in the world.
Lumbini being the place where the Buddha was born.
That's correct.
In Nepal.
That's correct.
And what was the involvement of, at that time, Vajradhatu?
Vajradhatu was asked to help organize fundraising, a committee to help fundraise for the project for the United States and Canada. They had committees and efforts through other organizations throughout the world, or throughout various parts of the world, the Buddhist world, and they had no one in the United States and Canada. We were approached and invited and asked to do that.
Around what year was that?
This was approximately 1984.
So at that time, probably Vajradhatu was the most, well, not about the most, but one of the best, well-established Buddhist organizations with
Very
representation,
much so.
Almost franchises in North America and Europe and teeny things other places in Latin America, but minuscule. But very well organized by comparison.
No comparison, basically, between what Vajradhatu was at that time and other Buddhist organizations. Rinpoche had worked with Carl Springer as the Director of External Affairs to really beef up that presence and that manifestation of our mandala. And the visits of His Holiness Karmapa really paved the way for that, gave us the entree to connect with major religious leaders, political leaders, and cultural leaders throughout the United States and Canada, and become known as a respectable and the most prominent Buddhist organization in the country.
And what other teachers were you involved in inviting?
His Holiness Karmapa.
How many visits altogether was he?
He had three visits.
And you were involved in the third one?
I was involved in the third one in 1980. And I worked on that visit for 6 months, assisting Carl Springer and traveling around with His Holiness and the whole entourage for 6 months throughout the United States and somewhat into Canada. 6 months.
My goodness. Going to all these places and organizing all the visits and all the black crowns and all the monks and all the political Buddhist and political country and
yeah, it was a really amazing experience.
And you were all of what, 25?
21.
21.
And from what I know, that third visit was extremely well organized and run. By that time of having gone through two other visits, the organization had it down, and Carl Springer really had it down, and it was quite an amazing show, and we would leapfrog one city to another. An advanced team would go to one city while the others finished up the prior city, and then the arrival would happen, and then we would leapfrog again to the next city and go on and on. Black crown ceremonies, meeting with mayors and governors and senators and so forth.
And I believe Peter Voltz, mm-hmm. you, Carl
Randy
Springer,
Sunday,
Randy
David
Sunday.
Sanford, a number of individuals traveled around with us.
And if I think about the organization, you had obviously the sort of political public relations organizational side. Did you also have the head of the CASM? Like a CASM?
We did. James Gimeon was the CASM in charge of that visit. And so we got the honor and joy of traveling and interacting with him day after day for many, many days.
So your positions were what? You had the CASM? Mm-hmm. What names did you have? Like a administrator, coordinator? What did you...
Yeah,
like what kind of government in travel? Like what kind of tent city did you... What was the vision?
Peter and I were assistant directors for the Director of External Affairs.
Carl
or assistants to the director. That's right. Assistants to the director. And
and then the local organizations provided the actual connection to the local folks and the CASM, the bodies that organized the tickets and so on.
Yes. What actually happened is that Carl had been to each center months, literally months before the visit even started. And I did some of that, and there was a gap in the middle of the visit, and we visited centers way in advance to get them ready, meet individuals that we would then have His Holiness meet and prepare for the actual visit, separate from the advance, you know, 5 days before.
Logistics.
Yeah.
At that time.
Right.
So you prepared everything, and you knew what was going to happen, and you had your contacts, and then you had your advance receiving team, and then it just all happened.
And as always happens, things would come out of the woodwork, you know, additional invitations, important people wanting to meet him, everybody in the world wanting to meet him as it got closer to the visit, and certainly when he was actually there.
And at that time, by the time of the third visit, I imagine the Karmapa had his own organization also.
He had Karma Triana
Dharma Chakra already occurring. And how did you fold in that organization in your traveling?
Basically, we split up the visit, where His Holiness was here for a period of probably 8 months or so, and we had about 5 of those months where we hosted his visits in the major cities, and then he went to Karma Triana for a month, Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in Woodstock, New York for a month. And then he visited some of their centers in the Midwest and Canada and another center in Hawaii.
And in terms of working with other lineages, by that time there were also the Dalai Lama's representatives had their own, and because there were a lot of great Buddhist scholars that come from the Gelugpa tradition, I imagine you were dealing with that also, right?
Indeed. There were invitations basically coming from lamas of all traditions. In Los Angeles, His Holiness had lunch with a famous Gelugpa Geshe there. In Toronto, His Holiness met with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, one of the most interesting encounters I will have ever seen.
Did you witness?
I did.
I witnessed their
meeting, greeting each other, and then they went off privately into another room. And Bernie Flynn was the Kasam there on the East Coast. He did the whole East Coast in Canada. He was with us. And Carl and I, coming up the elevator with His Holiness John Rinpoche and Punlop Rinpoche to meet the Dalai Lama.
Well, that's quite the elevator ride.
That was. It was
in Toronto.
A little bit tense.
A little bit tense. So, what other major visits were you, did you work with Kensa Rinpoche?
Did you work with
Trungpa Rinpoche? How many?
Well, the next really major one was that Trungpa Rinpoche did actually invite the Dalai Lama to come to Boulder. And that happened in the summer of 1981, and I was the coordinator for that visit. Subsequent to that, there were visits with His Holiness Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, Thay Sithu Rinpoche, Tulku Ugyen Rinpoche, others, I'm sure, Jamgon Kongshu Rinpoche, Shama Rinpoche, numerous visits.
What do you think Trungpa Rinpoche was trying to do? Why was he so keen that we get ourselves involved with our cousins, our uncles, our relatives?
It seemed quite clear that he was very much developing a bonding with what he considered to be his family of the lineage holders of his lineage, and he wanted us to share in that bond with them. He did not actually invite or let us host many teachers that asked to be hosted, and he would turn down a lot of requests that would come from the centers to the Department of External Affairs. Our organization, as we mentioned earlier, was the most established one and the most capable of hosting Tibetan visiting teachers. So centers both in Boulder and in the Dharmadhatus throughout the United States were continually asked if they could host so-and-so lama or teacher or geshe or whatever. And those requests would come to us. And Trungpa Rinpoche was very selective. He really wanted to limit the interaction to teachers that he felt were his family and that understood what he was doing and the way he was transmitting the Dharma in the West and would be supportive of that and would have an ongoing relationship with his students as opposed to just basically utilizing our resources to have somebody come and visit.
Yeah, we weren't just a conference center.
Right.
So of the teachers that are alive and active these days, I imagine we would deal with, we have a fair amount of dealings with Trungpa Rinpoche, Pundlup Rinpoche, who was just young.
Not so young anymore.
Who was he, like how did he was a child almost at the time, was he? No, maybe he was in your 20s like you were.
Well, I think you're referring to the at the time being the third visit of His Holiness Karmapa,
right,
when Pundlup Rinpoche first came to the United States, and he was 13 years old.
Right, he was young. And then Songtsar Khyentse, did he come with His Holiness?
He came only to the cremation. He never came and met Trungpa Rinpoche.
So he actually never actually met him. He came to the cremation.
That's my understanding.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And he came through his relationship with Dilgo Khyentse, Rinpoche?
Oh, yes.
Because
yes.
They're relatives, correct?
They're relatives in the sense of similar incarnations of Khyentse Wangpo the Great.
Okay. All right. That's an interesting Vajra blood.
Yes.
Relatives. And then, for example, a lot of people know Khandra Rinpoche, but at that time, there was no elder in Khandra Rinpoche's history that was particularly related to that series. So she's sort of a newer friend to our community.
Right.
Right.
Who also never met Trungpa Rinpoche.
Who also never met Trungpa Rinpoche.
Yeah.
What was the relationship of both the regent and the Sakyong to these major teachers?
Well, the regent was very involved in all of those visits, and if that's what you're asking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Rinpoche, I think, made a point of having them relate as much as possible, and experience and work with his regent as much as possible. In particular, with Khyentse Rinpoche, he pushed them to do that. And
both the Sawang and the Sakyong to work with Khyentse Rinpoche.
The Sawang was very young, and my experience of the visit starting in 1980 was that the Sawang, the then at that time Sawang, was not that engaged in those visits. He certainly met and spent time with His Holiness and the other teachers, but it was not a major thing that happened.
Even though the Sawang eventually went to study with Khyentse Rinpoche in Asia.
That's right.
Okay, and then eventually with Pendle Rinpoche.
Right. So there must have been more of a connection that happened in the visit where Khyentse Rinpoche empowered the Sakyong as the Sakyong, the Vidyata as the Sakyong, which led to the Sawang going to study with him after Rinpoche's Parinirvana in 87. One of the highlights or most important things that happened in that period was His Holiness Karmapa also confirming the regent. Confirming first in the 74 visit, confirming the Vidyadhara as Vajracharya and making a proclamation for that. And then later on, also confirming Trungpa Rinpoche's enthronement of Ussul Tenzin as his regent in Dharmaya. The first in the West.
What is your perception of our communities, both at the time, Vajradhatu, eventually Shambhala, place in relation to others? I mean, it seemed that we had our own distinct style. We were definitely a lay community by and large, except for, you know, we had Gampo Abbey. But we were very much part of a grander world. Of cousins and relatives and uncles and aunts, and you were part of the team that built all that.
Well, as you know better than I do, this goes back to 1974 and the first visit of His Holiness Karmapa, where initially Trump Rinpoche was viewed skeptically by the rest of the Tibetan world and his family. All the teachers were talking about, heard rumors about what he was doing. The first visit of His Holiness Karmapa was a major event in terms of confirming for Trump Rinpoche, His Holiness Karmapa confirming what Trump Rinpoche was doing and that he was doing perfectly well. And that established us as a major organization in the larger Tibetan world of the Kagyu and Nyingma lineages, which continued and grew as each visit happened, and each major Lama, Khyentse Rinpoche and so forth, came and experienced the reality of our organization, including the Dalai Lama coming and visiting. But many Tibetans still remain skeptical of what Vajradhatu was and Trump Rinpoche was. But the Western world, through the confirmation of the Karmapa and the Dalai Lama, Vajradhatu became even more the reference point for Buddhism in America.
Please tune in next week for part two of Julia's conversation with Derek Kalini. You are listening to Mosaics on Chronicles Radio, a production of the Chronicles of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Support for this programming comes from our listening audience. To contribute, visit chroniclesradio.com and click on Support This Work. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening to Chronicles Radio.